after they were dead, I remember the very first feeling I had was my heart was really pounding. I mean, it was really pounding. The second feeling I had was that my hands hurt from where I had strangled them. I always manly strangled them. And then the third feeling I had was fear.
Michael Bruce Ross was born July 26, 1959 in Connecticut. He was the oldest out of four children. He had two sisters and one brother.
Well, I'm a serial killer. I've killed eight women, six in the state, two in New York. I'm on death row for four of those women.
He was raised on a chicken farm. His childhood was not all fun and games because his parents' marriage was not a happy one. His mom hated farm life, and after the four children and two abortions, she would take off with another man. I couldn't find where it mentioned she returned home, but I guess she did, and then later be institutionalized. She would admit to the doctor that she had talked of suicide and beating her children, and it was talked that Michael would get the worst of it. And there's speculation that Michael's uncle, who had committed suicide, may have molested him while babysitting. There are reports of it after his uncle had committed suicide, and the job of killing sick chickens became Michael's responsibility, and he would strangle them with his bare hands. The older he got, he would take over more responsibilities on the farm while attending high school. Michael later would report he hardly remembered his childhood abuse, but he never did forget how much he enjoyed helping his father around the farm. In 1977, he would enroll in Cornell University, began dating a woman, and dreamed of marrying her. She had become pregnant and have an abortion. This would cause the relationship to struggle, and the relationship would eventually end, and this would be around the time he began showing signs of antisocial behavior and stalking young teenage girls.
When I was younger, I started out with fantasies that were very, well, they weren't violent. They were, I don't know how normal they were, but they weren't violent type fantasies. Mainly, I guess the earliest ones I can remember is I would kidnap women and take them to my safe place. And then they would fall in love with me and not want to leave. James Bond, Superman type things. Then when I got to college, somehow these started the degrading. Going into more violent fantasies. That's when my rape fantasies first started, was when I was in college. I started following women home, and I would get a thrill by them knowing that I was following them, that they would be scared, and you know that gave me a thrill. And then it got to the point where I actually raped someone at Cornell, and then the next person I actually raped and killed.
That someone he would rape and kill would be, I'm not sure how to pronounce her name, but it's like Dzunga Nkotu. But she was 25 years old at the time. On May 12, 1981, her body would be found 5 days later in Fall Creek Gorge. She had been caught on some rocks, and her skull had been fractured, and at first thought, believed she may have jumped from a nearby bridge, but none of it felt right because everyone said she was not one to kill herself. Michael would not be tied to her murder, though, until 1987, after he had already been serving 3 years in prison, and he would state afterward that he hated himself for what he did and tried to commit suicide, but he was unable to do it. He promised himself he would never hurt anyone again.
Serial killers like to strangle their victims, and that is, I guess, the most common form of killing because there's more of a connection there. It's more real, and it's not as quick.
His promise would turn out to be a lie. He would kill his second victim, Tammy Williams, in Connecticut in January of 1982. She was 17 years old. A witness would report seeing her struggle with a man. Her purse would be found at the exact spot, but she was nowhere to be found. Her remains would eventually be found in a wooded area not too far from where she was last seen. The third victim would be Paula Piera. In March 1982, she was 16 years old. This murder would take back in New York. She left school early that day because she wasn't feeling well, so she was hitchhiking a ride to her boyfriend's house. He would pick her up and eventually stop at the location where people dump trash at. He would pull her out of the car, he'd rape her and strangle her, then leave her only to take her purse, which he would toss out the window down the road. She was not found for 17 days. Michael would not be tied to her murder until the late 90s. The police would get DNA match from the semen found in her pants. He would eventually confess to the murder because he didn't want someone else to get the blame. The fourth victim, Deborah Taylor, in June 1982, she was 23 years old. This murder would take place in Connecticut. She lived with her husband at the time, but they had been on a trip and had run out of gas. They would separate to look for her service station. Her disappearance would be reported the next day, and the search would begin. Her remains would not be found until roughly 4 months later. Her skull had been crushed. The fifth victim was Robin Stavinsky. In November 1983, she was 19
years old.
This murder would also take place in Connecticut. She was supposed to meet her boyfriend later that day after work, but she never made it. A jogger would find her body in a wooded area about a week later. In early 1984, her purse would be found about 9 miles from where her body was found. The sixth and seventh victim was April Bruneus and Leslie Shelley in April 1984. Both of them were 14 years old. These two murders would take place in Connecticut. They were hitchhiking. They had run away from home. Their bodies were found the next day.
I picked them up. They wanted me to drop them off at a gas station. I drove right by the gas station. One of them pulled a knife on me, like a kitchen knife type thing. And I almost drove off the road. I was so surprised. And I don't know what I said, but I said something, and she gave the knife to me. I obviously scared her. Anyway, took them to a place, tied them up with some cloth that I had in the back seat. I put the younger girl, Leslie Shelley, into the trunk of the car, and I took the other girl, April Bernay, out, and I raped her and killed her, and I put her in the front seat.
The eighth victim was Wendy Barrett Buett in 1984 in June. She was 17 years old. This murder would take place in Connecticut. A wide search would take place, and she would be located 2 days after she disappeared.
When I attacked her, I don't believe I was in control. I don't think I could have stopped. Reason I say that is because there's a very clear point to me after she was dead when I was feeling, well, I didn't really feel anything. I mean, I knew what was going on, and I saw what was going on, but it was more like watching an old film that we used to see as kids in the high school, you know, I mean, in elementary school. They've been played so many times, they're all spliced, and it'd be going along and then jump. I'm not saying I wasn't there, it was a multi-personality or any of that kind of crap. I was there and I did it, but I wasn't 100% there.
A witness at the time would report seeing a 1983 blue Toyota with a man driving it. They reported he was following her. This would lead the police on to Michael. He would be brought into questioning and would eventually confess to the murders. He would only be convicted for the last four of them and would be sentenced to death on July 6, 1987.
You would think that if you killed somebody, that you would have that face imprinted in your mind, and that you wouldn't be able to get it out of your mind. I don't have that. I never had that. The only face that I can see is what was in the newspapers a few days later when they were missing. You know, like the high school picture. Anybody know where this girl is? Type thing. That's when I think of them. That's the picture I see. I don't see them as they were when I killed them. And if you had stopped me, like, right afterwards and gave me, like, a composite drawing of, like, 12 pictures, you know, some blondes, brunettes, whatever, I wouldn't have been able to pick them out even immediately after I killed them. I don't want to say I don't have any remorse. It's just it's like they weren't real. I know this sounds really terrible. For example, I can't see them as I was killing them. When I say I don't have any remorse, that doesn't mean that I don't have any regrets, that I don't wish that didn't happen, that there was something I could do to bring them back or anything. It's just that I don't have any feelings towards them. I feel like I should be tormented by what they looked like when I was killing them, or by tormented by what was happening immediately before I killed them and stuff. And none of that's there. None of that's there at all.
During the next 18 years, he would spend it on death row. It was reported he tried to commit suicide twice, and eventually he would meet a lady and they would get engaged, but she would end the relationship in 2003, but continued to see him until his death. But he became a Catholic as well, and in his final year of his life, he would support his death, stating he did not want the family to suffer any more pain, and he would be executed on May 13, 2005, at the age of 45.
They got me on death row like that's supposed to be some big punishment. For some of us, death is not a punishment. Living is what the punishment is. feeding ourselves Monday through Friday. Other than that, I'm in here. On the weekends, I'm in here 24 hours a day. If it's a long holiday weekend, I'm in 24 hours a day for three days, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Got radio, listen to public radio, classical music most of the time because I find it relaxing. I do a ton of letters. I get mail coming out of everywhere. Nothing but mail. 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 Mail all over the place. Oh, I'm a Star Trek fan. I like the Next Generation. I watch that. I don't watch a lot of other television, really. Most of the day I'm sitting in here listening to my music. When I'm not writing or I'm not typing or anything, I tend to lie back there. I got an old pillowcase I just cover up my eyes with, and I put the headphones on and put my music on, and then I'm gone. I just leave. That's how I cope here. Just put the headphones on, blocks off the rest of the tier, and I'm gone.